This is the Better Reading Podcast platform with stories behind the story, Jane's Be Better podcast, My Book Chat with Caroline Overington, and more. Looking for a particular podcast? Remember, you can always skip to it.
Welcome to the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story, brought to you by Belinda Audio. Listen to Belinda audiobooks anywhere, everywhere.
Hi, this is Cheryl Arkell from the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story. We talk to authors about how they came to tell us their story. Vicky Wakefield, welcome to Better Reading.
Thank you for having me.
It's great. Vicky writes fiction for adults and young adults. Her novels have been shortlisted for numerous awards. After You Were Gone, a psychological thriller, was her first novel for adults and was published in 2022 to much acclaim. She has now followed up with a book called To the River, a compelling psychological thriller about class, corruption, love, loyalty, and the vindication of truth and justice, and a brave dog called Blue. You probably know this already. I've got a real soft spot for dogs, particularly dogs that are in books. Do you know that?
Yeah, it's the dilemma of many a writer is how far do you go with the dog? Because they tend to take over as characters and, you know, you build up a lot of love for them, and if you kill them off, you're breaching the contract between the reader and the writer.
yeah, absolutely. Okay, all right, so tell me, you've been writing for a while, and I remember very clearly when After You Were Gone came out, and really to much acclaim. Had you had that same kind of response to your writing as you had for that?
For this novel, To the River?
No, for After You Had Gone.
I think that one, I mean, it did really well. And yes, it was received well by readers, but I also think I wrote a very unreliable narrator and probably an unlikable narrator. So it was probably more polarizing than To the River. But I tend to go where the story takes me, regardless of whether that means my characters are likable or not. And I think people are connecting more with the characters in To the River, not because they're nicer, but because they're maybe not so extreme. But yeah. Abby in After You Were Gone makes some horrendous decisions, and I think a lot of readers found it very difficult to get inside her head, and that was kind of the point that I wrote it. I wanted readers to feel how, you know, experience what it's like in the head of a mother who has lost a child. There is no reason. There's no coming back from the dark place. You know, you're going to be there forever.
Yeah, yeah. So what I'm thinking, so how long have you been writing and how did you get to crime fiction? And is it here that you found your success, or have you been writing for a living for a long time? Tell me about that career trajectory.
Sure. Well, I've always been writing. I've always been creative, I should say, either in the arts or in communications. I've worked in journalism. But I've always sort of been creeping towards the novel writing and not thinking that I had the experience or the education to do it. And for some reason, perhaps getting a bit older, you know, I was heading into my late 30s and I realised if I didn't do it, I wasn't going to find the time to do it. I had to make the time, and I had to build that around family life and children. My kids were really young when I started writing my first novel. I think my son was around two, which is, as you know, is a difficult time at the best of times trying to find space to be creative. So I'm still writing for young adults. I've written five books for young adults that have done very well. My fifth book, This Is How We Changed the Ending, won Book of the Year in 2020.
Yeah.
So I'm still very squarely in the young adult space as well, but I've always written across readerships and genres. I just haven't published elsewhere since until we brought out After You Were Gone, which was my first psychological thriller. So I tend to write what I love to read, and I love reading crime. And young adult for me was always a really good space because that's where I discovered my love for reading and writing. So I've always been heading in the direction of being a writer, but I I needed to give myself permission to do it and not wait for some miraculous sign from the universe that it was time. So, and that was it. Once I started, I was off and running, and now I've got too many voices in my head and too many stories to tell and still not enough time. But, yeah, I'm really happy to have found this place that feels like it fits for me. Yeah.
Talk to me about the difference between writing for young adults versus writing fiction. And I've talked about this on this podcast before. When I was young and I was a bookseller working on the shop floor, it was a very long time ago, Vicky, but at that time there really wasn't a category that it was even called young adult. Like, you know, there were kids reading for sure. And when they would come to, you know, when they'd finished with the kids department, the transition usually was like a Tom Clancy or a fantasy book, or I'm just trying to remember some of the authors that we would have directed them to, these readers. But there wasn't specifically a category of YA, was there?
Not really. And I think that YA is there to tell you who the readership is, but it's actually slightly restrictive. I think a lot of adult readers who love reading YA, we already know how great the books are. Yeah. We know how wonderful the storytellers are, and we don't need that label to tell us who. Sorry, that's my dog barking.
That's okay. Is that Blue?
No, that's Sicky. She goes through we have a back dog door, and if she hears something in the backyard, she goes through it like a torpedo, and I'm sure one day she's just going to break the door down.
Yeah.
So young adult fiction is, despite having a label and also having a lot of shelving, you know, the stories were always there.
I think the stories were there and the readership was there. They were there in droves. It just, for some reason, didn't become a category. I don't know, until we labelled it. Because there aren't any more YA readers, yet it's a category that's really blown out. You know, it's so popular.
It did have a wonderful period, I'd say, around 10 years ago, where adults were also rediscovering YA. Amazing it is. We're talking about stories for young people, but they have as much depth and complexity and beautiful language and ideas.
Absolutely.
As any adult novel. Obviously, some of them are for younger readers and some of them for older readers, but there's a whole expanse where it crosses over in all directions. And back when we were reading Stephen King and Tom Clancy or...
Yes, they were the people. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, or Virginia Andrews, you know.
Yes. They were,
but there was something about them that made young people love them, and that's there in droves. So anyway, to get back to your question, I don't think my style changes between readerships. My style and my language and the way that I write is all exactly the same. I'm just writing from a different perspective. So once I shift from writing a book for young adults, in which case I have always explored crime and class and corruption and family dynamics. I did that with my young adult books, and I'm doing the same thing with my crime books. I feel like the only thing that has really changed is that I'm writing from the perspective of older people who adults who have hindsight and foresight, or sometimes no foresight, and that wisdom comes into it and that experience. But apart from that, my writing doesn't change.
And how is it that you came to writing crime?
I don't really think about who I'm writing for when I'm writing it. I have a character in my head, and in this case, Sabine, who is one of the main characters in To the River. At the time, she was a 17-year-old girl. So that seems to fit. I thought I was heading straight back into young adult territory, but then I brought in Rachel, who is, a late 40s retired journalist, well, a redundant journalist. And that brought in a completely different perspective, and I realised the story needed to move between Sabine's timeline as a 17-year-old and also 12 years later when she's 30 after being on the run for 12 years for a crime she's been accused of committing. So at that point it became a completely different story. The characters were the same, but the story had changed, and I realised, oh, no, this is... it's an adult book, and I'm willing to roll with that. And so was Text Publishing, my publisher, who are incredible at just letting me, you know, navigate my way through story and seeing what comes up at the end of it. And in this case, it turned out to be an adult crime novel.
Yeah, because, you know, that was, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that was going to be my next question, because often there's a challenge with the publisher as well if an author wants to cross genres or go from writing YA to go, you know, there's, I'm not going to call it a friction, but, you know, there's a persuasion and a conversation and should we and shouldn't we, whatever. But it seems your transition was quite smooth.
Well, I feel like it's not going to be just a transition. It's not going to be a one-way thing. I think I will dart between lanes because
right.
I've a lot of young adult stories to tell and I'm halfway through another young adult novel. Again, I wasn't thinking when I turned this into an adult novel, but I did actually check in with my editor and say, hey, what do you think of this? And her enthusiasm gave me a little push to, okay, that's what it is and that's what we're writing now and that's okay.
Yeah.
So I feel some readers out there or people who know me as a young adult writer might think I've changed lanes, but I haven't. I'm just, this is the race I'm running at the moment and I will go back and write more young adult novels.
Yeah, and there are a few authors that do that, like Melina Marchetta comes to mind in terms of swinging from YA to adult fiction. She kind of, and she's, I think, said the same thing as you've said, Vicky, that, you know, she just writes what she writes and whatever it is, whether it leans towards a YA or it leans towards adult, that kind of happens in the writing.
And Melina's young adult books were just iconic of the time and beloved and still are. And yeah, I feel like there is almost a little bit of, not backlash, but just a little, maybe a tiny feeling of abandonment when a writer goes, is doing this thing that you love and then they go, oh, I'm going to do something else now. So when Melina started writing fantasy, I felt that deeply because I'm not a huge fantasy reader, but you know what, I'll read whatever Melina writes and then I found a whole new genre where I was like, no, it doesn't matter where she goes, I'm going to follow.
Yeah, so here we go with her.
Yeah, and my readership in young adults, many of them are adults now. You know, they're always on the cusp of adulthood anyway, so maybe they'll take a shot at crime.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's just really about growing the audience, not shrinking, I don't think, at all. Okay, talk to me about how your discipline of writing is, like how you approach your job, because I hear so many different approaches to writing. And how it is that you came to write, was it that did you study writing? Did you talk to me about coming to writing and then how it is that you have made that your job?
As I said, I've been a writer for a long time, but not a qualified writer. I don't have any education in writing. I think my apprenticeship has been served through reading. And
I don't think there's a qualification, Vicky, for writing, is there?
No, well, I didn't know that. I mean, you're talking to someone who failed high school spectacularly and has muddled her way through dozens of different jobs, trying to fumble my way towards something that I felt that fit. And
were you a great reader at school?
Massive reader, yeah.
Massive reader.
Yes, always. To the point that I would lie and people would say, Vicky, come knock on the front door and say, Vicky, can you come out to play? And I'd be like, Mum, tell them I'm not feeling well. But I was, you know, I'm halfway through White Fang or something and I couldn't put it down. Yeah, I devoured books and still do.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Did you think ever at that time that might be something you might like to do, or was it so out there that it was unreachable to you at that time?
Well, here's the thing. When authors go out to schools, I don't think they realise what an impact they have when they go to a state-run school where kids do not see people, don't see authors, and don't hear that their stories enough to know that this is a possibility for them. So I never thought, I mean, I was at school in the 80s, it's a long time ago, but it didn't feel like a possibility to me, no. Yeah. I thought I was a reader and that's what I was, and that was my box, so to speak, and then I would go on and forge a career somewhere else. So I worked in a bank for quite a while, and I've been lurching towards this writing thing for some time, but I've never really allowed myself to believe that I could do it. But then I did start in my mid-20s, I took a job as a communications officer for a skincare company, and I am ashamed to say that I have bluffed my way into quite a number of jobs because I'm very good at putting together a portfolio but not necessarily have great experience. So, so I started doing corporate kind of writing as well, and then segued into some graphic design. I also didn't know how to use a computer, but I read manuals and I learned. By computer, I meant the new wonderful Apple G4 Macintosh, you know, those beautiful bubble-looking machines, you know.
I remember them.
Yeah, beautiful things. So I have a tendency to whatever it is that I want to do, I will learn.
Yeah.
I will go 100% at it and I will learn it and I will nail it. That seems to be my superpower. Although I'm learning the drums at the moment, and let's just say that starting the drums in your 50s is, you're a little bit behind the eight ball. But I'm giving it a crack and I go
100%. Absolutely. Well, they say music is all about practice, right?
Oh, yes, it is. A lot.
Yeah. Okay, I want to go to your first book, How That Came to Life.
I actually did try to get some education at one point, and I joined a course in professional writing, and I was about 6 or 8 months in, I think, and struggling. I don't think I learned the same way as a lot of people won't learn. We were supposed to emulate the voice of another writer, and I chose the great Meg Grossoff, who is an incredible young adult writer, who wrote the book How We Live Now, which was made into a film. And I had to emulate her style, her tone, and I wrote a page and it was not great. As in it didn't sound like her.
Yeah.
But what it did was sound like me, which was kind of a turning point. It was like, okay.
Yeah.
I'd written before, but I'd never gone, okay, this is the start of something. But I knew with that page that I had the start of something. And here's a nod to regional writers' festivals, because I went to one here in Adelaide called the Salisbury Writers' Festival, very tiny little community-run, council-run event. And there were editors and publishers there that were on a panel, and they had there was a session at the end of the day where you had to submit the very first page of something, and you would be anonymously critiqued, which was appealed to me because I'm not a fan of being the centre of attention. I don't like direct confrontation. I can't handle failure. And so everything was looking amazing because I could just send this one page in that I thought maybe had something. So it was sitting in that audience listening to other people's work get critiqued, I was so nervous. And then there started to be some comments coming in about mine, and, you know, one was dismissive, like overwritten, but one publisher stood up and said, "Where are you?" And it was my worst nightmare and my biggest dream all at the same time. Everyone believes that they might be handed a card, you know, one day and say, "Send me your story." Well, that happened to me, but I had to overcome this massive fear to do it. Like, I had to stand up in a room full of people and say, "That's mine." And that publisher was Dean Blacklock, who was with Scholastic at the time. And, yeah, she came up to me afterwards, handed me a card and said, "I want the rest of this story."
Oh, wow.
Now, to my eternal shame, that book did not go to Dean, but she has been an amazing supporter throughout my career. Like, and I never forget that she's my fairy godmother. I'm with text and they're amazing.
So it's one story, writing a page, excuse the pun, but another story, writing an entire book. Oh, tell me how you approach that. I mean, it's like, okay, I like it, I want more. But did you have more?
No, I didn't have more. I think I lied and said, yeah, I've got, you know, half a book for you. But yeah. I didn't have half a book. I had maybe two pages. So from there, but, you know, that's what I needed. I needed someone to call my bluff. After so long I'd been bluffing my way through things, and Dean Blacklock has walked up and called it. So I'm like, oh, I've got to write it. And I was panicking, thinking, I can't do this, I can't do this. But, you know, I did it. I did it between 9 o'clock at night and 2 o'clock in the morning in, wow. You know, just in the semi-dark in my dining room on my archaic computer, just putting together this story. And I drifted off into another world, and I realised that, okay, this is what it is. This is what it's like. Yeah. And I am still a night owl. I develop some processes that still kick on now. I get a lot of work done in the evening in the writing. With anything else, it's on daytime, but I'm just a vampire when it comes to writing.
At night. And so when you got that first book published, how did you feel?
Oh, there's no real way to describe. I mean, it's such a huge leap of faith when you send it out. It went out to an agent, and who was my dear friend, Sheila Drummond, who passed away years ago. And she sent it out to her. Sometimes agents have readers. They will go through and read submissions to filter through, because, you know, it takes a lot of time. In this instant, Sheila's reader was Emily Gale, who is another young adult and children's writer. And Emily, plucked me from that slush pile and said to Sheila, you need to read this. And it just went from there. She immediately said, I want to represent you. We're going to start sending this book out. I don't know. I go through various stages of what level of shock am I at when something great happens. And I think that was the biggest shocking moment ever. Like, this doesn't happen. You don't write one book. You don't send it off. You don't get a response within a couple of, you know, weeks, and suddenly we're on submission. And then within another week after that, I had a two-book contract with Text Publishing.
Yeah, wow.
So it was a massive leap of faith, and to this day I'm always questioning myself, am I good enough? I'm not good enough, you know.
Yeah.
This is terrible, you have to start over. But at some point I do find this little moment of calm in amongst it all that says, you know what, you thought you couldn't do it and you did do it, so just get on with it and do it again.
Yeah, yeah. I think that writing is a profession where that happens a lot. Like, you know, I mean, I think we all have some level of self-doubt. I mean, you know, I think if you don't have that, it's unusual. I mean, I'm always doubting myself as well. But with writing, I think it's a double whammy in a way, because every time you deliver a new book, it's not like you've done it that many times that it's going to be good. Do you know what I mean? It's not, it's like every time you're putting yourself out with it, and, you know, they can either say yes or no, or, you know, is this one as good as the last one, or is, you know, the next one. But there's, do you get what I'm saying? I'm kind of fumbling my way here, but you know what I'm saying? It's not as straightforward as delivering something known, because, you know, you've had practice, you've been doing it for a long time. Yes. All of that come into it, but it's
an accountant and knowing that this is the process, it's got borders and edges. No.
Yes.
Writing is messy. It's unpredictable. I'm flaky as all hell. There's a lot of things that need to fall into place for me. I can't be worrying about the dogs needing to go to the vet, or, you know, there's a bunch of stuff I need to shovel off my driveway before I can back out. It's like I know a lot of writers now, and I didn't when I started writing.
Of
the
course.
More I learn about this, we are all absolutely different, and we all have different ways of working through, and there are plenty of them that are absolutely professional and goal-driven and get things done and get it done in an efficient manner. I'm not that writer. I'm the messy kind. I'm the flaky kind. I'm the one who waits for the muse. But when I'm in that, in a good space and everything's happening, you know, it doesn't get much better. I feel like I've fallen into the job I was meant to be in a long time ago, although I couldn't have done it in my teens, early 20s. I couldn't have done it then. I, I needed for the right time to happen, and the time came.
And are you still writing, you know, late at night, or have you bought that because it's now your full-time job? Do you bring it into the day, and have you changed the way that you work, or you've kept it the same?
I tend to fit writing in between other things. We actually, as a family, own a small business, so we've got, there's a bunch of other stuff to do. Yeah. So I probably put in 25 to 30 hours a week writing.
Yeah.
But that's me doing it in my sort of spare time in the evenings, and sometimes during the day. It really depends. It's a kind of job that's I can pack in between life as much as possible. So it's been perfect for me.
Yeah. Tell me a bit about To the River.
To the River is a story about a cold case called the Caravan Murders that happened back in 2007, where a deadly fire kills a bunch of people in a remote caravan park. And one of my main protagonists, Sabine Kelly, comes from a violent criminal family, and she's accused of the crime and she confesses to the crime. She says she's responsible, but then she escapes custody and disappears for 12 years. And this book is set on the river, obviously, To the River, and into the story comes Rachel, who's a retired, well, redundant journalist who still has a nose for a good story but is struggling with her children growing up, moving out, her life, you know, getting smaller. So she's quite ambitious, and she lives next door to Sabine's grandfather, Ray. So what happens here is we have these two women coming together. Both have different agendas. Rachel wants the story. Sabine wants the truth. And then we have these two women who really don't like each other or trust each other, having to work together because there's someone out there who doesn't want this story to be told.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Okay, Vicky, so great to talk to you. And do you know what I'm going to say is there are so many people that listen to this podcast because they're writers, they're aspiring writers. There's a lot of people that listen to this podcast that are readers as well, of course. But I think there's a lot there in your story for aspiring writers. It really is. And I think that, you know, what you've shared is going to give people, you know, a lot of hope, I think, in terms of choosing writing as a career. So thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
I hope so. I think it's like a virus. You've got to go out of your way to catch it.
Yeah.
And once you are a writer, you'll never stop being one. It just becomes part of you. So I wish everyone the best, and don't wait as long as I did.
Yeah, very inspiring. Thank you, Vicky.
Thanks.
If you'd like more information about Better Reading, follow us on Facebook or visit betterreading.com.au.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by Belinda Audio. Belinda audiobooks are available on CD and MP3 from online booksellers and bookshops everywhere, or you can download from Audible, Google Play or the iBook Store. We've also created our own app called BorrowBox that's available from both the App Store and Google Play. All you need to do to get it working is to download the app, join your local public library, and you'll gain access to the world's best collection of ebooks and e-audiobooks available for you to loan on your phone or your personal device. Belinda, we're here to enable you to escape, imagine, grow, and be inspired through the power of storytelling. Belinda Audiobooks. Anywhere, everywhere.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
If you enjoyed this podcast, leave us a review and check out the other podcasts on the Better Reading Network.